Okay, well, we are going to start in about 1 minute. I'm going to go live right now. Open up the lines, everyone. I want you to unmute the lines. I want to attract a really loud yes. And stand up. Just go ahead and stand up. Even if it seems silly, just stand up, smile, and at the top of your lungs, yell yes if you are ready to begin. We're closing this year. We're about to embark on a new year. Just give us a loud yes. Here we go. Ready?
Yes!
Jack, they were so loud I couldn't mute the line.
That was better than Dick Clark at New York Times Square.
I mean, sometimes it's a little bit of a risk we take, because when everyone is so loud, you can't mute the line. And I tried 6 times, and I couldn't mute it. I started perspiring a little bit, and on the 7th time, I got it. So, Jack, welcome to the call.
Thank you, Alex.
Before we begin, I want to give a little background on how this call came to be. And we are graced by the presence of Sprite Laureano. Sprite, you're with us?
I'm here.
Go ahead and give us the history of Feed 333. And I'll direct everyone to feed333.org/donate. That's the page. We welcome all donations. Again, not mandatory, but we do welcome them. And Sprite Laureano was the person who had the original idea to start this cause and has had a lot of collaboration with a lot of people and has raised a lot of money so far and fed a lot of kids. How did the idea start? Take us from the beginning to the present.
Well, the beginning was during my 3rd viewing of the movie called The Secret, which I hope every person on this call has already seen many, many times. And during that 3rd viewing, I was halfway through Jack Canfield's story of how he went from, in 1 year, I think it was $8,000 or $12,000 to $100,000. And I was so inspired that I just shut the movie off and I wrote down in my journal, right then and there, okay, I'm ready to play a new, really big game of the manifestation. I'm going to create $30,000 in 30 days. And so I started visualizing that. It felt really good and exciting and believable. And the next day I came back to my visualizations again and was doing my affirmations, and I heard a voice. And the voice said, that's not a big enough game for you. So I crossed off the 30,000 and I wrote 300,000 in 30 days. And again, it felt really exciting and good. So I just kept going and visualizing it. I came back to my visualizations the 3rd day. And again, I heard that voice that said, this isn't a big enough game for you. So I crossed it off again and I wrote down 3 million in 33 days, and I just did that intuitively, and as soon as I saw 3 million in 33 days, I knew that something very powerful was about to happen, because over the years of my studying of numbers and mysticism and science of numbers, I knew that 333 was often the numbers associated with divine help, angelic help, and ascended masters. And so I knew that whatever was happening here was going to be very blessed. And so the next image that I got in my mind was the image of the faces of the children that I donate to, that I have for the last couple of years to through the Children's Hunger Fund. And as soon as I saw their faces, I knew it was about feeding 3 million children in 33 days. And I had absolutely no idea how to do that. I've never attempted doing anything like that before. But I just really believed in it, and I started sharing it, telling my story with the people around me. And pretty soon, amazing, when women and men around me came forth and said, yes, we want to help, we want to be a part of it. Within a couple of weeks, I had an incredible, sound, nonprofit company, World Trust Foundation, on board with me. So I didn't have to go reinvent any wheels and recreate another nonprofit organization. And within that same period of time, I immediately had a technology company that came on board that said, well, we know the how. We can build a technology to help you get it done. That's how it started.
Well, that's not only a great story, but what's even more special for me is it was Jack's story that inspired it in The Secret.
Absolutely. And when I saw Jack at Mark Victor Hansen's mega speaking event, several months ago, and I went up to Jack and I just let him know that he was the he was the inspiration for this, and he had already heard about Feed 333 from many different people, to my understanding, had heard about it, and so I let him know that he was the inspiration, and I asked him if he'd be willing to do a call with us, and yay, graciously said yes, and here we are.
Well, Sprite, I want to thank you, and just sit back, relax, and I'm going to do my best to grill Jack on this law of attraction that he knows so much about, and I can't wait to extract the body of knowledge we're about to experience. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Jack, welcome to the call. Now, many of you listening and any of the guests I've invited, you may know Jack Canfield as one of the co-authors of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series of books, but his Breakthrough to Success seminars and his e-coach program online has made a profound impact on his students from all over the world. And one of the laws that he focuses on, one of the laws of the universe, is the law of attraction. And so that is the topic for tonight, and he's agreed to share his insights and his unique abilities to talk about some of these, some of the laws, not only the law of attraction, but some of the other laws and some of the parts of those laws. And we'll talk about visualization and how to find your purpose in life, how to eliminate distractions and debt and attract more money and wealth, achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and let's start with one question that I think is so important, Jack. A specific incident. What specific incident in your life first inspired you to start studying this law of attraction?
Well, you know, it goes way back to when my parents put me on a bus to go off to college, which fortunately for me was Harvard, and I got a football scholarship to go play there. I was not rich. And they all thought I was going to go to law school. And after 1 year at Harvard, I realized I did not want to be a lawyer. But I realized later that what I've become is a universal lawyer. I'm really studying universal laws. And so the laws of, you know, suing each other and all that stuff didn't interest me. But I think that what we have to do is become students of universal law, just like there's gravity that, you know, affects all physical law. And there are other laws of physics that we can study. There are universal laws that we need to study. And so what happened for me, how it all really started, was I was sitting in a laundromat in Chicago minding my own business, when an undergraduate student came up to me and said, you know, would you like to go to a lecture series with me up at Kendall College? So we started to get to know each other, and I went to this lecture series, and there was a guy there speaking about the power of the mind. And it just blew me away. And I went up to him, and I said, I've never heard any of this stuff before. We're only using 10% of our potential and our mind and our brain. Where can I go and learn more about this? And he said, well, there's this foundation called the W. Clement and Jesse B. Stone Foundation. You can go study some stuff there. Turns out W. Clement Stone was a self-made multimillionaire who was worth $600 million when I met him in 1969. And he was a friend of Napoleon Hill, who wrote the classic Think and Grow Rich. And together, Napoleon Hill and Clement Stone wrote a book called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. And I think what we now call Law of Attraction, back then we were all calling Positive Mental Attitude. And so basically, he taught me that I was creating my own reality through my thoughts and expectations. He taught me about the power of intention, the power of expectations, certainty, affirmations, visualization, goal setting, do it now, you name it. And we used to refer to Stone as an inverse paranoid. He literally believed the world was plotting to do him good. And no matter what would happen, you know, I mean, his house could burn down, and he'd say, well, obviously, in this negative event is a seed of an equal or greater benefit, and I just have to look for it. And he literally lived his life that way and taught me to do the same thing. And that was the beginning for me. I worked for him for a year and a half, and he gave me a gift and said, you can go anywhere, take any seminar, I'll pay for it as part of your employment. And I took him up on it, and I took 38 weekend workshops in 52 weeks. So I became a total junkie in terms of wanting to learn about all this stuff.
Well, let's talk about The Secret, because many people have seen you in that movie, and many people see you twice a day, because there are reports that, especially people who have reported to you from your e-coach program and Breakthrough to Success seminars program, that you know, many people watch The Secret daily, and they see you daily. What led you to be in that movie? What was the tipping point for you to say yes, or what led you to that?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, my first reaction when someone told me about this woman was filming people for some movie was I didn't want to do it, because most of the people that are in that movie were actually attending an event that I was putting on called the Transformational Leadership Council, where I invited people like John Gray and Marcy Shymoff and Bill Harris and, you know, all Bob Proctor and so forth to come and attend. And basically, she knew we were all going to be there, and she'd already filmed some people and said, you know, can I come? Because you've got them all there. I can just take them out of the meeting for the 3 days you're there and film them. And my first reaction was, oh, it's going to ruin my meeting. And then when I was meditating the next day, I realized something in me just said, hey, you know, tell the woman yes. You don't know where this is going. It's shown up. You know, just step into it. And I'm so glad I did, because everyone in that movie has had just amazing benefits occur. Michael Beckwith, John Gray, and I just recently did a filming of the movie, a showing of it at a conference called the Oneness Conference. And then we did an hour and a half of questions and answers afterwards. We had so much fun. And we're all getting requests to speak all over the world and, you know, writing new books about it and so forth. So it turned out to be a fabulous thing. So my new phrase in life is just say yes.
Well, as a lawyer of the universe, I think you had a profound impact on that movie, because they were at your event. So that was a cause set into motion many years ago, right?
Well, you know what's really interesting? My cousin was a movie star for a while, and I'd always thought, gee, I want to be a movie star. But I don't want to have to learn all those lines and, you know, wait around and why they get the lights correct. You know, that was not my idea of a good time. And now, in a funny way, you know, 30 years later, I can't walk down the street anywhere. I was in Bangkok in the airport, and someone said, are you Jack Canfield from The Secret? In Bangkok. So it's definitely kind of achieved that goal through law of attraction once again.
Well, there are many other universal laws, the law of cause and effect, the law of abundance, the law of vibration, which almost as a cousin to the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take two specific personal examples, how the law of attraction has made a significant transformation in your own personal life. Let's start with the first.
I think the first one was that we wanted to do a best-selling book, Mark and I. And we had never written a best-selling book. We'd both written books that, you know, it sold nicely back of the room, and I had a book that sold for teachers. And we decided that we were going to do a book of stories, and we were rejected by 144 publishers that said, this is stupid, people don't read short stories, it's a dumb title, etc. And Mark and I just kept holding the vision that this was going to happen. I don't know where that certainty came from. It just was part of, I think, both of our thought forms by then, me from W. Clement Stone, him from the people he'd studied with. And we just kept going on in positivity, holding the vision, knowing that somehow, someday, the right publisher would emerge. And we went to a bookseller's convention where there were, I think, 4,000 publishers had booths there. And we spent 3 days walking from booth to booth saying, would you publish our book? Would you publish our book? And then HCI, this little publisher down in Florida, said, we'll do it. And we said, how many copies do you think you'll sell? And they said, well, we think maybe 20,000. We said, well, our goal is 1.5 million in 1.5 years. And he laughed out loud at us. I remember this very clearly on the phone. I'm sure everyone listening has had someone laugh at their dreams. And we said, no, we're going to do this. And a year later, we had sold, I think, 1.3 million copies. And we just kept holding the vision. And I think what a lot of people don't understand about law of attraction, I think a lot of people think if you just say, I'm going to be a millionaire, that 1 month later you're going to be a millionaire. I mean, it took us several years from the time we decided we were going to have a best-selling book until we did. But the really cool thing about it was the right publisher hadn't showed up, because the publisher we got, they were pretty much going out of business. And because of that, they treated us like we were, you know, walking on water. And we saved that company. And because of that, they then pulled out all the stops. And we've now got 115 Chicken Soup for the Soul titles in over 47 languages around the world. That would have never happened if we'd have been with Simon & Schuster. They never would have published 6 or 7 books a year like we do right now. So being with a smaller publisher was perfect, and we attracted that. But at the time, it looked like rejection, when really it was just that's how long it takes for that to give birth.
Well, give me another example. I didn't realize that actually happened, and I didn't even think about it. I knew you went with a smaller publisher, but if it weren't for the smaller publisher, you wouldn't have as many titles, and probably you definitely wouldn't have made the Guinness Book of World Records of having the most bestsellers at the same time.
Exactly. We had 7 books on the New York Times bestseller list on the same day. The other thing that's interesting, Peter Vegzo, who's the publisher, was up at this church in New York, St. Patrick's Cathedral, about we found this out a year later. We were both there a week apart, and he went in and said, Lord, please send me some authors to save my company. And we were in New York, Mark and I, being rejected by every publisher in New York, and one morning we walked into St. Patrick's Cathedral. We're not Catholic, but we lit some candles and put some money in the prayer box and sat down, and we both said, you know, Lord, please send us a publisher.
Mm.
And as a result of that, now we both have little crystal images of St. Patrick's on our desk that I bought for all three of us.
You both, both parties attracted each other.
Yeah. But I'll tell you another example of law of attraction in our life. When we started to, when I brought my first, my last book out, The Success Principles, I wanted some kind of national public television, you know, exposure on TV. I didn't want to just do the Today Show once, which I did do, but I wanted something that was over and over, because you know that repetition is part of the key to, you know, instilling your idea into somebody's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the blue, we just visualized being on national TV, Patty in my office and myself every day for 30 days, just we'd close our eyes and visualize it, and we were certain something would happen. And we got an email, it wasn't even addressed to either of us, it came to info@jackhanfield.com from the people that run Carlton Sheets' program, he's got the No Money Down infomercial on TV, saying we'd like to talk to you guys. So Patty called him up and they said, we'd like Jack to do an endorsement to open Carlton Sheets' 20th anniversary infomercial, and in exchange for that, we'll endorse any book or, you know, put his book cover up or say whatever you want to say. And they were buying $40 million of television time. And we said, why did you call us? They said, we don't know. We just started getting this impulse that you were the guy. And quite frankly, we didn't even know that much about you. And once we met you and talked to you, we realized that you were the guy. And then, as a result of that, they decided that they wanted to do a project with our coaching program. So we developed a coaching program with them that took a year and a half of other, you know, conversation that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't just emailed us out of the blue, you know, because of what we had said in the motion through what my friend Bob Sheinfeld calls the Internet, which is whenever you think a thought or visualize a vision, it's like sending out an email to everyone on the planet, because your brainwaves can travel a minimum of 250,000 miles and be picked up by other human beings. We proved that with experiments with astronauts on the moon and students down at Duke University. But anyway, that went on. We did 1.5 million in coaching programs with them last year, and they had only projected 700,000. And so we've got a great program going with them now. And that all came through law of attraction.
Well, what's interesting about the law of attraction is, you know, some people may slough it off as serendipity or coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it fate, karma, luck, synchronicity, or, you know, it just kind of fell into place or came out of the blue or whatever. But it is an actual law that is very much related to the law of vibration, and it just, it responds to whatever vibration that you're offering, right? How does that vibration law work? Can you get more specific with that?
Everything is vibration. I mean, you know, we talk about good vibes and bad vibes. If you study quantum physics, you realize even what we consider physical matter is actually simply an interruption in a field called the quantum field that creates a certain vibration that then we perceive as matter. And so what we want to, there's only two kinds of vibration, what we call good vibes and bad vibes, or positive vibes and negative vibes. So literally, vibration attracts that which is like unto itself. That's why the rich get richer, the banks attract all the money. If you go on vacation, I've always noticed when I go to Hawaii, all the people wearing the shirts with the little ponies on them,
mm-hmm.
you know, they tend to be the old wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem to be hanging out together. And all of the what I call the new wealthy, they're all wearing the Tommy Bahama shirts. They're all hanging out with each other. And all the guys wearing the T-shirts that say, drinking problem, I don't have a drinking problem. I get drunk, I fall down, I get up again. No problem. They're all hanging out with each other. And it's not that they look for the T-shirt. It's just that they're all kind of a similar vibration, and they can feel it. You know, you can walk into a room, and people will feel comfortable with the people that are vibrating at the same level of either poverty conscious or negativity or criticism and judgment, or people that are what I call possibility thinkers that are out there creating goals and great things in the world. And we're just naturally attracted to that. So if I raise my vibration, then those things of a higher vibration, the match that are attracted into my life. It's the old be, do, have concept. Most people thought if they had a lot of money, they could do the things they want, then they'd be happy. We're finding out now, if you'll just create happiness internally and do the things that you're inspired to do from that state, you will then attract to you everything you've ever wanted.
Well, so then, to recap what you just said, the law of attraction responds to whatever vibration you're offering, like attracts like, and
right.
and it doesn't decide whether it's good for you or not good for you. It just simply responds to the vibration you're giving off, and so that's what you attract, correct?
Absolutely. And here's the thing most people don't realize, that when you are watching the news and you're seeing, let's say, the war in Iraq, and you're getting really angry about it, mm-hmm. you're actually attracting more war in Iraq into the world, more war, more conflict, whatever. Whatever you focus on and give your attention to, it's the feelings you're feeling about that, the intensity of that, that attracts more of it into your life. So you can be feeling angry about something you don't want, and you're actually attracting more of that into your life. If you focus on what you do want, like stop watching CNN and start watching, you know, the Discovery Channel, or start reading books that are uplifting, or visualizing your goals,
mm-hmm.
listening to these kind of teleconferences, which there are thousands of now being offered all over the world by people like ourselves and all of our friends, then what happens is that's what you attract more of into your life.
So in other words, disappointment, loneliness, lack, confusion, sadness, that just attracts more disappointment, loneliness, lack, sadness, confusion. And then joy, love, excitement, abundance, that attracts more joy, love, abundance, and excitement.
Exactly.
Right?
And this is why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Mm.
Mark Victor Hansen once asked the Dalai Lama, he said, why are there so many poor people in the world? And he said, his answer was, wrong mantra. What he meant by that was, they're all thinking the wrong thoughts. I am poor, I'll never get rich, this isn't going to work, nothing ever works for me, you can't get rich in this town, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, everybody's saying it in a different way, but the point is, if you talk about how bad it is, you get more of how bad it is. If you talk about how good it's going to get, or how good it is, by focusing on the parts of your life that are working, then you get more of that.
Well, I mentioned this earlier, but so many people know you as one of the co-authors of the Chicken Soup series,
mm-hmm.
but you've done so much good and had such a profound impact on your students from the eCoach program online and your Breakthrough to Success seminars. Just give me three examples, if you would, of how the Law of Attraction has transformed some of your students' lives and how they've overcome adversity, because I'm sure many people come to you with some adversity and they're looking to get out of that. And somehow the Law of Attraction has aided them to do that because they changed their vibration. Can you give a few specific examples of that?
Well, let me read you two quick excerpts from emails I got recently, and then I'm going to tell you a story that actually happened to my nephew after he took my seminar last summer and then took my advanced seminar last February. And it's an amazing story. But let me just read this because I was thinking about this today. I knew you were going to ask me this. And Lenny Evans writes, he said, I've read The Aladdin Factor and The Success Principles, and I've also watched The Secret 9 times on pay-per-view, and I believe I'm beginning to really understand the Law of Attraction. He said, I have a few stories that will blow you away, things that have happened to me since I met you. He says, I've moved into my dream home on the exact date I attracted it, before I was living in a really bad place. I went from the brink of bankruptcy and barely surviving to now earning almost $200,000 a year with Isagenics, which is a multi-level company that I've given a number of keynote speakers for. He says, I now consistently train with Kathy Coover. She's the president of the company in charge of training. And she says, I even spoke on stage at the convention last year. Been invited to speak at this year's conference in Las Vegas. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So he was on the brink of bankruptcy and went from that to $200,000 in 1 year. David Novak just wrote, he says, Jack, I bought your Success Principles audios book off the iTunes music store after seeing you on the Today Show. I don't have a lot of time to explain to you how inspirational it was and how helpful it was to me. But let me say this. I went from working at 8 to 5 for a television station as the art director, making $33,000 a year, and never seeing my own family, never getting to spend time with my daughter, to starting my own business and making over triple what I was making in 1 year. And I get to spend as much time as I want with my baby girl. I want to personally thank you. Mm-hmm. But here's the coolest story ever, I think, anyway. My nephew's name is Zach, and he's about 30 years old. He's not even 30 yet. He's like 27, something like that. And he takes my seminar, and we watch The Secret in the seminar. And he gets home, and he decides, I want to meet this woman named Lady Sovereign. Now, she's a rap singer from London, and evidently very hip, and he had kind of a long-distance crush on her. And he thought, why would this rock star, this international rap star from around the world, you know, totally, you know, media celebrity, go out with me? He said, if I could get $10,000, raise it, not spend a dime of my own money, but raise $10,000, and then let her know I've got $10,000 to take her out on a one-night date of her life, would she go out with me? So he created a website, and he said, help me get jiggy with, or whatever it was, Lady Sovereign. And within 1 month, he had 10 million hits on his website. The San Francisco Chronicle picked up the story. The BBC picked up the story. As a result of that, Lady Sovereign's managers picked up the story. They called him to find out if he was a kook or not, decided that he wasn't. Said, look, if you get to $10,000, we'll have her go out with you. It'll be a great PR story. 14 hours before the deadline, he got the last $500, got to $10,000, rented a yacht, rented a chauffeured limousine, got a chef on the lot, yacht to cook gourmet meal, picked her up after her concert. They went to the yacht. They drank champagne and all the best liquors and stuff. They had this great meal, took her back to the suite at the top of the best hotel in San Francisco. They partied all night. Then they got on first-class tickets to L.A. the next morning so she could fly down for her evening's concert, and he went to the concert with her the following night. All based on law of attraction. All he did was put it out to the universe, didn't know how it was going to manifest, simply intended it, believed it was going to happen, and 14 hours, took about 2 months, 14 hours before she was to show up in San Francisco, he got the last $500.
It's incredible. It's incredible, the power of that. I don't just sum that up as coincidence. I think it's a universal law that happens. I have my own story in 2001. I lost 80% of my income because of a move and the birth of my child. We moved from New York City to the Bay Area. And I asked the question, you know, what must happen to make it inevitable to make my annual income into a monthly income? And I didn't think of any of the barriers. What must happen so that it's inevitable? And it happened in 2 years, not 3 years, like I already I had proposed. And so it's unseen forces that happen. And the funny thing is, if you intend something not to happen, just intending it not to happen, you attract it. How does that work? Because many people miss that, especially when they're setting goals, and we'll be talking about achieving goals a little later in the call. But, you know, when you ask yourself, I don't want this, I don't want to be sad, I don't want to feel a feeling of lack of or not enoughness, and yet that is what they attract. Why does that happen?
Well, it goes back to what we said. Anything you focus on and attend to and give your energy to, you attract into your life. So just right now, if everyone listening, if I were to say to you, don't think of elephants, everybody gets an image of an elephant.
That's right.
So the reality is the unconscious, the subconscious mind does not distinguish, or does never hear the words don't, not, and no. So if I say to my son, don't slam the door, I'm sure I'm going to get a slam door because the image comes up is of a door slamming. If I say to him, close the door softly, the image that comes up in his brain is softly closing the door.
A lot of parents listening, Jack, many parents, including myself, have said, don't do that, right?
Right.
But then if we just replace what they're doing with something else and say, do this instead, right?
Exactly.
They end up doing it.
Exactly. I mean, how many people have said, don't forget to do your homework? Just said, forget to do your homework. I mean, it's really a subtle, nefarious kind of thing that's in our languaging. But one of the things I teach in my seminars is whenever you hear yourself say don't or not or no, instantly change it to, well, what is it that I want? And so literally now if I hear anybody, my staff or my children or my wife or myself, say a negative, it's almost like I just automatically go, well, what do you want? Because too often, I'll give you an example of why sometimes law of attraction seems not to work for people, even though they say they're doing everything. This one woman I was counseling, coaching, she was describing her ideal mate to me. She wanted to know how to use law of attraction to get her ideal mate. And I said, fine, first describe to me your ideal mate. And she said, well, no, I know clearly what I want from my ideal mate. Tell me how to get it. I said, well, just for a drill, tell me. She said, well, I want a guy who doesn't smoke, doesn't sit around and watch TV all day, doesn't gamble, doesn't drink too much, doesn't put people down. She went on about all these dozens. And I said, let me ask you a question. I said, have you been in a relationship recently? She said, yeah. I said, was the person you were in a relationship, did they smoke, did they drink, did they watch TV too much, did they abuse you verbally? She said, yes. And I said, what about the guy before that? Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no wonder. All you focus on and talk about is what you don't want in a man. And you keep recreating it. Someone once said, when you're stuck, you're not really stuck. You just keep creating the same reality over and over. You're still creating. You're just creating the same thing, so it doesn't look like anything's changed. But actually, it keeps changing from what it was to what it is again.
It's the same. It may not look the same on the surface, but deep down it is, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we keep marrying the same person five times in a row, even though we've had five wives, because we keep focusing on what we don't want instead of what we do want. So the key, obviously, always is to ask yourself, what do I want? And then focus on that. We'll talk about different ways to do that.
Well, let's talk about an area that eludes many, many people because it's such a broad question and a lot of question marks just fly out of people's ears like, gosh, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I know what I don't want, but I don't know what I do want in this regard. And that is one's purpose in life. You've done a lot of profound work with people on assisting them to find their purpose in life. And I want to make this distinction because I wasn't aware of it, but I want to, as far as someone finding their purpose in life, what's the difference between a goal, a breakthrough goal, a vision, and then our purpose in life? And if you're listening right now, please grab a pen, or if you're typing, grab your keyboard and type that in, or write that in. Goal, breakthrough goal, vision, and purpose in life. Four things, and Jack Canfield is going to tell us the difference between each. So let's start with a goal.
Well, actually, let's go in reverse order. And the reason I say that, Alex, is that really the goal should flow out of your purpose.
Gotcha.
So I think it's important to talk about purpose first. Our purpose in life, let me give you my purpose, then I'll explain how I got there and how people listening can get there as well. My purpose is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in the context of love and joy. Now, how did I get there? I got there by asking a set of questions. And you and I talked about this a couple of days ago.
We did.
You do something very similar. And anyone who works with purpose does something very similar because purpose is about qualities. It's about qualities like joy, empowerment, love, you know, et cetera. And so what I asked myself was, what are the two qualities that when I think about myself and the people describe me and they say, that's who Jack Canfield is. And when people that know me over time, they'll say, Jack is love and Jack is joy. You know, he's an ocean of love and he's really joyful and he really brings joy into the room. And then what is it, how do I like to express those two qualities? So that's the second question. So what are two qualities that describe you? And what you do in your work is you ask people to think about people they admire,
right?
And, you know, and what qualities are they manifesting? Because we're always seeking in others what's wanting to be expressed in ourselves that hasn't gotten full expression yet. That's why we're attracted to our spouse. They have qualities, like my wife is much more fun than I am, and I'm wanting more fun in my life, so I'm attracted to that. She needs more groundedness, so she's attracted to me. So anyway, then, how do I express those? How do I enjoy expressing them? Well, inspiring people, like with the chicken soup stories and all of that, and then empowering people with things like the law of attraction, my books on success, my seminars, and so forth. So, and then the third question is, what would the world look like if it were perfect for you? If you were to describe the world as perfect, how would it be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, it's everyone's living their highest vision. I believe if everyone lives their highest vision, they'll all be like cells in a body that are working perfectly. And I might be a kidney cell, and someone else is a heart cell, and someone else an eyeball cell.
Mm-hmm.
But when all the cells work totally together, you get a body. So if everyone in humanity is doing their purpose, their inborn thing to do, that which they've been given talent, that which they find easy. The things we have talent for, we find easy to do. They don't feel like work. That's our feedback mechanism that says you're on course. This isn't a struggle, and you feel good and joyful when you do it. Now, you put all three of those together, two qualities, how you enjoy expressing them, and what the world would look like, which tells you, again, what you're seeking to express. So for someone else, it might be order. For someone else, it might be justice. For someone else, it might be everyone's having a great time. For someone else, everyone's contributing to the ecology. You put those together, you get your purpose statement. So that's what our purpose is. And the thing about a purpose, it's kind of a prime directive. You never really finish it. I can never really finish inspiring and empowering people to live their highest vision because there's always going to be more people coming along.
It's a work in process.
It's a work in process. It's kind of my overall guiding mission, if you will. And then, out of that, we then have our vision. And our vision is what our life would look like, what the picture of our life would look like if it were perfect in what I call seven categories. And different people divide them up differently, but we're all pretty much saying the same thing. And for me, it's financial, things like net worth, income, you know, assets, profit, etc. Job and career, you know, where would I be working? What would I be doing? What kind of people would I be working with? What kind of clients would I have? My ideal relationships in terms of family, and my spouse, what we'd be doing and how we'd be relating. Health and fitness. Fifth would be fun and recreation. You know, travel, hobbies, those things. 6 will be personal, which includes personal growth, spiritual growth, learning goals. For me this year, I'm learning to play the piano and the guitar. I've played the guitar for years, but I never really got very good at it, so I've got a guitar teacher now. And 7 is contribution and legacy. What do I want to contribute? If I have a vision of my ideal life in all of those 7 areas, not worrying about the how, just what do I want if I could have it exactly the way I want it, now I've got a vision. Now, that vision can have a time frame of now, 5 years from now, before I die. We get to determine that. And then out of my vision and my purpose come my goals. And goals are those measurable objectives in time and space that say how much by when. For example, a lot of people, when they set goals, they don't really make them specific. And so if you apply how much by when, for example, instead of saying, I want a vacation home,
mm-hmm.
you'd say, I will own a 2-bedroom, 3-bathroom house on the west coast of Maui by December 30th, 2008.
Okay, now hang on. I want to make this clarification for everyone listening. Right now, if you're listening, write this down. Those are probably the two most important questions to ask yourself when you're setting a goal. How much, and then by when. And Jack is so used to this, you know, he's just saying it because he teaches it so often, but when I saw him first say it on stage, it made a profound impact on me. How much, by when? Two questions, nothing could be simpler, but yet it can have such a profound impact in achieving goals, and I'm sure it has. Keep going.
Well, in my seminars, I'll ask, how many people want more money? And everyone puts their hand up usually, and I'll walk over and give a guy a $10 bill, and I'll say, there. And he goes, no, more than that. I go, well, how is anyone supposed to know?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that, you know, for money, if I say I want to increase my income, the goal might be I will earn $300,000 by December 31st, 2007. So it has to be specific. If you call a travel agent, the first thing they ask you is, where do you want to go,
mm-hmm.
and when do you want to go there? How long do you want to stay? How much are you willing to spend? They get very specific. Until you answer those questions, they can't get you there. And so in life, in order for us to have a destination and get there, like the travel agent's going to make it happen, we have to be very specific. You can't say, I want to live on the ocean. What ocean do you want to live on? Pacific, Atlantic, Indian, you know, which one?
Brilliant.
And so specificity. I want to spend more time with my spouse or children. I hear everyone say that. But until you say, I want to spend every Thursday evening with my family from 5 to 10 with no interruption, or I'm going to take 1 2-week vacation and 4 3-day long weekends with my wife by, you know, December 30th, 2007, it's not going to happen because your unconscious, which is the creative solving problem solver in your mind, I call it the GPS system. If I put in a destination in the GPS system in my car, it instantly draws me a roadmap. I don't have to figure that out. But I do have to put the destination in, and it requires a street address, 929 Via Fruteria, Santa Barbara. If I just say somewhere north, no map gets drawn. So you got to be very, very specific.
And that specificity is really, it applies in all walks of life. If I want to remember someone's face, I always remember the context where I met them, and that makes it a lot more specific, and generally it has to do with location
mm-hmm.
and when. It just amplifies the whole process. So you said there were 7 things. Can you recap those?
Sure. Financial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everyone listening, just take a second. We'll just slow this down.
Go ahead.
And just ask yourself the question, if we were meeting a year from now, let's just pretend it's January 1st, beginning of the year, or, you know, a year from now, whenever you're hearing this call, then what would happen is you say, look, 12 months from now, what's one thing I would like to have different in my financial life? And then make it specific. And then do look at job and career. What's one thing? You know, maybe I'm going to get my MBA degree, or maybe I'm going to have a certain number of clients, or I'm going to open up California as a market for our distribution system, or I'm going to be president of my company or salesperson of the year. But a specific, measurable goal that someone outside can look and say, he did it. Relationships. Pick one relationship and say, okay, how do I want that to look, and how will I know when I got there, and in a measurable way? I can measure spending an hour a day with my wife. Getting closer to my wife, I can't measure. But an hour a day, that we can measure. Health and fitness. Maybe you want to run a 10K race or a marathon, or you want to lower your cholesterol level, or you want to, you know, lower your weight. Fun and recreation. Program something you're going to do that's going to be fun and schedule it. And so you know you're going to have done a certain thing by a certain time. 2 summers ago, I took my then 14-year-old son and we went to Paris and climbed the Eiffel Tower. And next year we're going to China and we're going to climb the Great Wall of China. And that's a specific thing we can do by a certain date. Personal, think about learning goals, spiritual goals, whatever. What would you like to say 1 year from now? I did it. And write it down. And then finally, contribution and legacy. We all say, well, we want to volunteer more. We want to end hunger in the world. We want to do, and it always seems so big that we don't do anything. And if everybody did a little bit, everything would get handled.
Mm. Brilliant. Financial, relationships, health and fitness, fun and recreation, personal, and contribution.
And job and career.
And job and career. Excellent. Okay, so what's interesting is, as you're talking about, I talked about goal and breakthrough goal and vision and purpose in life, you started with the end first. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, Stephen Covey talks about begin with the end in mind, and as an academic, you know, he talked about that as one of the habits. Jack Welch, as a business person, talked about an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You, as a lawyer of the universe, you're talking about purpose in life as, you know, begin with that end and then go backwards to your vision, then a breakthrough goal, then a goal. So,
well, you're chunking it down to more and more specificity. You know,
mm-hmm.
to say I want to be a great speaker is kind of a vision. But to say I'll give 100 talks and get paid $30,000 for each talk, and each group will be a minimum of 1,000 people, and I will achieve that by 2012, you know, December 31st, 5 p.m.,
mm.
now I've got a specific target that chunked down what great speaker means. And so we have to have that. And just to finish this off, breakthrough goal.
Mm-hmm.
What that is every year I ask people to pick one goal that will quantum leap your career or some other area that you consider important in your life, but not just like a 10-yard play in football, but a 70-yard pass play, something that will really take you to the next level, double your income, triple your impact. For instance, for Mark and I, 1 year it was write a best-selling book, and that was what turned in the Chicken Soup for the Soul. For another friend of mine, it was to have a 5-minute radio show every day on chiropractic in Dallas so that everyone, when they heard of chiropractic or thought they needed some, would think of his name. For someone else, it was market their product on the Internet. For someone else, it was open up China as a market. For someone else, learn a foreign language like Spanish or Chinese, or get my realtor's license, which opened. I was flying on a plane just the other day with a guy who read a book. It was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Kiyosaki. He was working for the Parks Department in California, making a very minimal state wage. And he read that book over lunch, and he got so blown away by it that he went out and he got a realtor's license, said, where's the most expensive real estate in California? He said, one of the places is Santa Barbara. I'd love to live there. Came here, invested himself in meeting all the people in the realty world, got himself a job in a real estate development corporation, and now makes over $3 million a year. Did all that in 3 years.
Unbelievable. And let's not forget Sprite Loriano. She thought large, you know, feeding 3 million children in 33 days, and this call came to be as a result, and seeing you in the movie The Secret. So great things can happen when you have that type of goal.
It's very interesting. I interviewed General Wesley Clark for my book and The Success Principles, and one of the things he said was really interesting. He used to be the head of NATO, so this is a major guy. And he said, it doesn't take any more time or effort to dream a big dream than it takes to dream a small dream. And when you're really tapped in and turned on, like Sprite is, what happens is your intuition is tapped into source energy, you know, to God, universe, the quantum field, however you want to call that. And when you're that tapped in, when you set a goal, if it's not the right goal or if it's not big enough, then your intuition or God or however you want to say that will speak back to you as it did to her. And in 3 days' time, it took her goal from making $30,000 in 3 days up to 3 million children being fed a dollar a kid in 33 days. And so, and then that was the right thing, and she knew it. And so for a lot of people, when they use law of attraction, part of why they don't really get the fulfillment they want is their goals are coming out of ego, not coming out of being tapped into their highest self. And that doesn't mean your highest self couldn't want you to have a Mercedes-Benz. It may well want you to have that. But if it's coming from that place, then the whole thing works a lot faster and much more easily.
So in other words, it's almost like opening up a hose that water flows through, and it's not crimped where it's blocking the water. It just flows right through, and it's easier to achieve the goal.
That's right.
So purpose in life, and we talked about vision and the breakthrough goal. Now, what's just the goal? What's an ordinary goal?
A goal is just any objective in time and space, how much by when. My goal could be to, you know, buy 5 poinsettias for our house for Christmas by Friday, and that's a very specific goal. Someone wants to describe it as a dream with a deadline. It's just something you want that you put a time frame on, and then you can hold yourself accountable to it. Without a time frame, there's no accountability.
I've never heard it put that way. That's awesome. Well, visualization. Let's move on to visualization. You are a master at this. You teach it like a master. It's one thing knowing it and doing it, but it's another thing teaching it so other people can not only do it themselves, but they actually absorb it and bring it into their lives. We've heard it many times, you know, visualize, 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 but how does visualization work, you know, from a cosmic sense, from a metaphysical sense, and then is it possible to utilize visualization to help others overcome their own adversity?
Well, basically, visualization is very, very powerful. The unconscious thinks in pictures. You know, all of our memories are basically pictures first. And then after that comes, you know, the feelings and the thoughts that go with it. So basically what happens is that if we're going to be successful, we need to program that GPS in our mind I talked about earlier. And the way you do that is by having a clear picture of what you want. So we have the goals. That's the intellectual cognitive part. But now to get it down to where it really starts to have an impact and momentum and moving in our life, we need to create a picture. There's a couple ways to support that. One is, you can just close your eyes and visualize what it is you want. Now, there's two kind of visualizers, what we call eidetic and non-eidetic. That won't be on the test. No one needs to memorize it. But what it means is that some people close their eyes and they see things in three-dimensional Technicolor, Superscope, Dolby Sound, you know, no big deal. Other people close their eyes and it's just like the movie never starts. It's just blank in there. But when I work with people in my seminars, I'll say, do you have a car? And they'll say, yeah. You know, these are people that say they don't visualize. They'll say, imagine there's something in your glove compartment you never saw before. Open up and see what it is. They'll say, oh, there's an apple in there. I say, can you actually see it? Well, no, I just kind of think it. Well, that's visualization. So the first thing to realize is that most people don't visualize identically. They just think it more than they see it. Over time, people can deepen that, but generally it's not required to be successful. Secondly, when you visualize, what you want to do is do it consistently. There's research now from NASA that says you must do this visualization process 30 days in a row to get a reprogramming and a rewiring of the brain. Actually, neurochemistry of the brain changes, but it takes 30 days without interruption. I won't go into the experiment. It takes too long to describe here, but it had to do with astronauts wearing goggles that made their world appear upside down. And about 30 days into it, all the astronauts, their brain flipped the image right side up again, even though they were still wearing the upside-down goggles 24 hours a day. And what they determined was it takes 30 days to rewire the brain. Then they did a second experiment where they had people take the goggles off after 15 days, put them back on. It still took another 30 days from that time before the effect occurred. So we know that this concept of, you know, it takes 21 days to create a habit, so forth, 30 days and you're safe. And so the visual, a lot of people say they visualize it doesn't work, and it's because they don't do it consistently long enough to really get the brain to reprogram itself, to start coming up with creative ideas, and to open up what we call our reticular activating system. Right now, you're not aware of what you feel in your right foot, but as soon as I say right foot, everyone can feel it. Why weren't you aware of it? Because your brain was filtering it out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little part at the bottom of your brain, the RAS, that acts like a gate guard at an estate. So you come up with the car, and it says, do you have an invitation? Is your name on the list? If your name's not on the list, you're not getting in. So we don't perceive the things in our external environment that can help us achieve our goals until we've programmed the unconscious to believe that it really can have it, and then it opens up the perception. We start seeing things, and we're always there. Bill Gates sees more opportunities than you and I do. That's why he's a billionaire.
And he gets better at it, too.
He gets better at it all the time. And, you know, and every time he gets to a new level, then it opens up the next level to him. And as I said in The Secret, when you're driving down the road in the night with your headlights on, you can only see 100 to 200 yards ahead of you, and you don't have to see the whole road. If you just navigate the next 200 yards, the next 100 yards after that will show up, and then the next 100 yards after that. And so the key is your unconscious will give you the things you need and the people and the resources and the steps and the things to read and the people to hang out with, etc., just enough to get you to the next step. You don't have to see the whole roadmap. It's very important to get that part. So what I teach people is this. You've got to close your eyes and do this at a consistent time every day so it becomes a habit. Best time is in the morning when you first get up, go to the bathroom, come back, sit down, and then visualize. Or do it at night before you go to bed. Do it twice as best, three times is even better. There's research on that as well. And what happens is, you simply relax, and I would invite people right now, just take one of the things that you said was a goal for this next year, whatever it might be, weight loss, your ideal weight, it could be a certain income level, your job goal, whatever. And just we'll just do like a real miniature 2-minute visualization here.
Great.
Give people an experience of it. So what I would ask everyone to do, and again, this is truncated, but just to kind of lay down the blueprint, to close your eyes, unless you're in a car, and to take a deep breath. And take a few deep breaths where you can feel your shoulders rising up a little bit and then falling down. And with each breath, you can feel yourself becoming more and more relaxed. Even as I say that, I slow down. And let yourself go back in time to a time in space when you were really, really relaxed. It might have been on a beach on a vacation. It might have been in a meditation retreat. It might have been getting a massage in a spa, sitting in your backyard in a hammock. And just take a moment and really allow yourself to once again feel that level of relaxation. And from this place of relaxation, allow yourself now to focus on one of your goals for next year. And take a moment now to actually create an image of what it would look like if you were looking out through your own eyes. This is critical. You're looking out through your own eyes. You don't see yourself outside. You're in you looking out. And you see what you would see if you had already achieved this goal. Here's your hands on the steering wheel of your new car. Or there you are walking into the new home and being handed the keys by the real estate agent. Or you're walking across the stage receiving the award for Salesman of the Year. So take a second now and just create all the visual details of what you would be seeing and add in the sound of what you would be hearing if you had already achieved the goal. And then ask yourself and create, what would be the feelings I would be feeling? Would it be joy, relief, pride, excitement, thrill, driving my car, whatever it would be? Create that feeling inside yourself right now. Feel the feelings now. This is what really adds the gas to the engine of this visualization. This is the part that most people leave out. Very good. And then allow yourself to take a deep breath, and as you exhale, open your eyes, come back into the room. Now the key here is when you first do this, you've got to create the image. It's like when I make a movie, it might take me 6 months to make a movie, but it only takes 90 minutes to watch it. It might take 5 or 6 minutes the first time to create that ideal image. What suits are people wearing? What's the sky look like? What's the carpet color? All the details, fill it in as richly as you can. But then when you come back to it, it's like bringing up a slide, and you just look at it, feel the feelings, hear the sounds, move on to the next one. You can do it very quickly. You can go through, I do 21 goals a year, 3 in each of the 7 areas, and I can go through those in, 7 or 8 minutes each morning. I have one written on a card. I look at it, close my eyes, visualize it, feel the feelings, hear the sounds, and then I go to the next one. And it just keeps my brain focused on that, keeps law of attraction at work.
That was great, Jack. You know what I really love about an exercise like that is the silence speaks of sorts, Just
no, it's so true. If this weren't a one-hour call, that would have been an 8-minute exercise.
Well, it worked for me. I hope it works for you if you're listening right now. It's just a fabulous exercise. And going back to visualization, is it possible to utilize visualization to assist others? To assist them to overcome their own adversity? Is it possible to visualize that and actually make that happen and attract that for them?
You can visualize things in the world being the way you want, but I'm now coming to the conclusion that it's not the best use of your time. That if you focus on creating your own life the way you want it to be, because too often people are trying to change people outside of them out of their need for that person to be different so they can be happier. My kid will clean up his room. My husband will stop drinking. The principal of the school will become a nice guy, whatever. And as long as I'm trying to change the outer world so I can feel better, it really keeps me stuck. I'm focusing again on what I don't want so much. Now, when I was visualizing Chicken Soup for the Soul, I visualized millions of people going into the store and buying copies of the book. I think that probably worked. But in general, I think it's a better use of time to focus on your own behavior. But if you are going to focus on other people's behavior, focus on it for their highest good, not for your gain.
Mm-hmm. So it's always an inside job,
mm-hmm.
any way you look at it. Yeah, I happen to agree. I think that if I visualize my ideal scenes, then I will attract that, and by doing so, I get started and having it become real. And that's why I have a lot of students who tell me, you know, I watch The Secret. I watch the movie The Secret every single day, and I still don't have what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, my feeling is, if I were to judge it, it's because they're visualizing outside of their own reality versus going inward and trying to make things happen and attract, you know, for their own personal good. Do you get that feedback, too? Like, I'm doing all the work, but it's just not happening for me.
I do. It's probably one of the most common emails I get, and I think usually what's happening is they're doing something wrong, and obviously, or they'd be getting the result. Some of the things I've noticed when I work with people on that, you know, and rather just get an email but get to talk to them on the phone or coach them in person, number one is they've got doubt. A lot of people say, well, it just doesn't work, you know, and so what they're focusing on is it's not working. And if you focus on it's not working, you're going to get more of it's not working. And one of the solutions to that is keeping what the Abraham Hicks people call a positive evidence journal. The idea is, there are things in your life that are working. There are places where law of attraction is working. Like today, literally, I walked into the chiropractor's office, and as I was walking in, there was a woman coming out of the treatment room, and her name was Susie Thomason, and she said, "You're Jack Canfield." And I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "I took a workshop with you 20 years ago in Los Angeles." I said, "Get out." She said, "No." So we had a nice conversation, and part of that, she said to me, "You know, just yesterday, I was thinking, I need to reconnect with Jack Canfield." Now, this woman and I have not seen each other for 20 years, but she'd seen The Secret about 3 times over the last month. I live in Santa Barbara. She knows that. She thought, I ought to reach out and connect with Jack Canfield. And there, within 24 hours, we walked into each other. Perfect example of the law of attraction. But if you were to go home and write that in your evidence journal, see, law of attraction worked. I thought I wanted a good parking space. I got a good parking space. I started thinking about my brother Bob, and my brother Bob called. And I like what you said earlier, you know, if it's inevitable that I'll succeed, you know, say the sentence again. I loved how you said that. You asked yourself a question.
I asked myself a question. What must happen to make it inevitable for my annual income mm-hmm. to become my monthly income? And you can replace annual income with monthly income with anything. You know, what must happen so that it becomes inevitable to, and then you can fill in the blank.
Right.
But
what that does is that, it does a number of things. One is it brings in the idea that it's inevitable, gets rid of doubt, and now it's just a question of how, not if. And so when you're coming from that place, because doubt is a negative vibration, and if you can think of a vibration going up and down like a wave, and then another one that's exactly the opposite of that, my desire is a positive vibration, my doubt's a negative vibration, they literally cancel each other out and create a flat line. And so you've got to give up doubt. The second thing is most people are doing, and we've talked about this already, so I'll just mention it, is they're focusing on what they don't want rather than what they do want. So it's critical that they really get that piece right. And another thing that's happening for a lot of people, and this is not very well known, is that a number of people are what are called psychologically reversed. They're switched. It means that anything that goes into their head positively, like reading a self-help book, doing affirmations, listening to this call, actually has a negative effect. And a way you can determine if you are psychologically reversed is you simply have someone muscle test you. You put your right arm out or your left arm out. You have them just test how strong that is by pushing down on it. Then you say, "I totally and unconditionally love myself just the way I am." Then they have them test the arm again. If the arm goes weak after that statement, it means you're reversed, that a positive statement made you weaker. So what you do is you take the heel of your left hand, like if you were to do a karate chop with your left hand, that part that would hit the wood, and you tap on it 35 times with the tips of your right fingers. And that takes you out of reversal. That usually lasts for several hours. So before you do any kind of personal growth work, you want to make sure you're not reversed. And the other thing that I find that stops people from saying, you know, or not having the law of attraction work, is that they're not taking action. And I write about there are two kinds of actions. There are obvious actions and there are inspired actions. If I want to be a doctor, I've got to go to medical school. Nobody's just going to show up because I've been visualizing being a doctor and say, here's your MD, go practice. if I want to lose weight, I've got to do something specific about that, you know, which is stop eating as much, exercise more, drink more water, do deep breathing exercise, de-stress my body through meditation or yoga, whatever. So the key is there are certain obvious actions that all people in any field would agree on. If you want this result, you need to do this. But the part that most people don't understand are what I call inspired actions. When you start practicing law of attraction and you're visualizing and you're out of doubt and you really believe you can have it and you're focused on it and you're talking about it in a positive way, what will happen is you'll get inspiration to act, just like Sprite got an inspiration to start this project of the 333. And so what happens is you may be walking down the street and you go, I need to go into that bookstore. I don't know why. I wasn't looking for a book, but I just feel that I'm supposed to go in there. Trust it. There might be a book on that front table that will change your life, the exact thing you need. Or maybe you'll meet someone in the coffee shop at Borders that will become a lifelong friend. I remember once I was at a conference, and we were back in the days when we were kind of, I guess, quasi-hippies would be a good way to say it. Everything was love, light, and joy. And I wanted to go to this workshop on how to make a lot of money. And my wife got really kind of mad at me, like I was being too materialistic or something. And I went to the workshop, and I sat down. It was a three-hour session in the morning. And I sat next to a woman. I said, what do you do? She said, oh, I'm a researcher in feline health. I said, feline health? She said, cats. I said, well, what's your specialty? She said, cat leukemia. I said, you know, my cat's been diagnosed with leukemia. They told me it was terminal. There's nothing I could do. She said, it's not true. And she gave me some research. She gave me her contact info. We took my cat to this clinic, did what she said, and my cat's leukemia disappeared. Now, if I hadn't trusted that impulse to want to go to that seminar, I wouldn't have met that woman to save my cat's life. So you've got to be willing to risk, you know, taking the actions even though they don't make sense. And the last thing I say is that to be successful requires inspiration, motivation, information, and the last thing, perspiration. So it's not enough to be inspired, motivated, not enough to know what to do. You have to go do it. And I think too many people are sitting out there watching The Secret going, oh, I just want it. Sit around and it'll be delivered to my house by UPS or DHL. And I think, you know, there may be some things that will happen like that, and I actually have stories of it, but in general, you've got to go out and do the actions that are inspired from being in that state of a high vibration.
Well, if anything The Secret has done, Jack, is just raise people's consciousness to the law of attraction, to know that it exists and that it can work, but it doesn't mean that it's going to work in a positive sense. It can work whatever, you know, vibration you give it. I just know for myself, the vibration I gave before I asked the inevitability question, what must happen to make it inevitable for me to succeed in a specific way? Well, I was taught to ask the question, what if it were impossible for me to fail at? That's what I was taught by someone very famous, actually. And all my mind could focus on was impossibility and failure.
Well, so I just... Think about this, Alex. All of us were asked when we were setting goals, think of all the things that could go wrong and then how you're going to handle it.
Yeah.
And what that does, it just focuses all your energy on what could go wrong.
On roadblocks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you get more roadblocks.
It's amazing. And you're getting what you're asking for, really. But it's first identifying and understanding that that's the way it works. And that's what I think the power of The Secret, the movie The Secret, has done. Not just watching is not going to magically bring more joy and passion to anyone's life. It's just going to raise your consciousness that this works, and it can work for you or against you. It's up to you ultimately, which brings me to the next question, distractions. A lot of people in your eCoach program, a lot of people who go through your seminars, your Breakthrough to Success seminars, they talk about distractions. I've seen some of the questions that have come in. Mm-hmm. And so the question I want to ask you, because it mirrors what many people have asked you, how can I clear my mind from the everyday distractions that prevent me from attracting more money, more wealth, more success, so on and so forth? I mean, you take me. I'm a father. I'm a student. I'm a teacher. I'm a son. I'm a husband. I have all these roles, and at any given time, they can clash with each other, and they end up becoming distraction on what I'm focusing on. So how do you respond to that? What do you tell a student who has that challenge every day?
Well, basically, most people, when they raise the question, the reason they're focusing on they're getting all those distractions, they keep focusing on them, and they complain about them. I can't get anything done because my kids are always on my case, my wife's always bugging me for stuff, you know, blah, 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 blah. So once again, you're focusing on what you don't want. So again, focus on what you do want. I'll give you a good example. I was teaching in Chicago to a group of women on welfare. This was a number of years ago when I was still living in Chicago. And they were living in the Cabrini-Green Projects. And they all wanted to get out of the project because they're very unsafe. And they said the biggest challenge they had, and why it was impossible, they thought at first, was that they all had 2-3 kids. They were single moms. There was no child care. They didn't have any money to buy, hire babysitters. And what we eventually came up with was we focused on what is it you want. I want to go back to school. I want to get an AA degree. I want to go be a secretary. I want to make some money and get a house outside the ghetto. And what they needed was child care. So what we did was we created a kind of a commune child care situation that worked like this. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, these 5 women took everybody's kids. Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays, the other half of the group took the other women's kids.
Mm.
And so within 2 years, they all went to school, got their degrees, and got out of the ghetto because they focused on what they wanted rather than focusing on the fact that they couldn't get it because they had too many kids. I mean, you think you're distracted. Try living in a high-rise ghetto with 3 kids pulling at you, no husband to help, no income. Pretty tough. The other thing that really gets people is this what I call either-or consciousness. You'll hear someone, well, I want to be the CEO of my company, but I also want to be a good mom. I can't do both. I have to give up one in order to do the other. As long as you believe that, that will be true.
Mm.
If you believe, if you hold, like you could say, what would it take, to make it inevitable? What would have to happen for it to be inevitable for me to be the CEO and the great mom? You know, maybe I'd have to have some great assistants. I'd have to delegate more. I'd have to have a team I could trust. I'd have to like schedule my life such that I have X number of days off a year and can get home by 5 o'clock and have a really good nanny situation. Whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
The point is, I won't even come up with those solutions as long as I'm locked into either or thinking. And the other thing is, visualize your life with those distractions under control or those distractions eliminated altogether. Not like eliminate your children, but eliminate it being a problem. For example, some women I know have quiet time where from 3 to 5 they close the door and they tell the kids, unless there's fire or blood, do not knock on that door. You know, this is my quiet time.
Right.
As long as you're codependent and you think you have to be there every moment, your kids will stay dependent upon you. One of the things we learned when I got divorced 8 years ago, one of the positive things that came out of that was my wife and my current wife and I both have children from previous marriages, and our ex-spouses take the kids half the time, and we get them half the time, which means we actually now have half the week off with no kids, even though we get to be great parents. And so that turned out to be, for people that are married and don't have ex-spouses, it's very simple. You find your best friends who have kids the same age, and you say, look, I'll take your kids this weekend if you'll take my kids next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And you can create free time for yourself. My ex-wife, who was a therapist, was when we had our son Christopher, she had all this work to do, and yet she was having a baby. She got up every morning at 4:30, and she worked for 3 hours on her schoolwork and her internship before my son would get up. She just made it happen.
Well, there's one thing that is very interesting to me is in looking at the daily regimen, and sometimes it's mundane for people, other people get excited by it. If you take time, just breathing space, just time to get away, like for, I have a date night with my wife,
mm-hmm.
and just 2 hours during the week makes a huge difference just in breathing space from the kids and just, spending time together just to debrief each other. And it's quiet time. And sometimes it's better not to go to a movie, just to have a private conversation. So finding that time, just like you mentioned, with the mother having the private time with kids,
mm-hmm.
so important. But people don't put that time aside for themselves, do they?
Well, no, most people don't. And what I do in our family is we have Friday night as date night as well, but Monday night's my night.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch Monday night football without her getting on my case. I can go play poker. I can work at my office till 3 a.m. without her saying you work too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's my time. And so I think what a lot of couples find is they carve out time with their spouse, but they forget to carve out time for themselves. And so it's critical to have alone time as well as to have together time. The other thing that we found is the average American watches 4.5 to 6 hours of TV a day. And when you're watching TV, if you look at Law of Attraction, think about what you're attracting into your life if you're watching most TV shows.
Yep.
Violence, chase scenes, drugs, sex, alcohol, on and on it goes. And so one of the things that my mentor, W. Clement Stone, taught me way back in the 60s was what he called the hour of power. He said, I want you to take an hour a day and cut out TV.
Mm-hmm.
So in 365 additional hours a year, you're going to get. And he said, I want you to spend 20 minutes meditating and visualizing. I want you to spend at least 6 minutes doing gratitude. you know, making a list of all the things you're grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I want you to spend about 14 to 20 minutes reading, and then I want you to spend 20 minutes exercising. He said, if you do that, you're going to be healthier, wealthier, and wiser. And that has been something that's absolutely changed my life. It's an inviolate hour a day that I spend doing that.
Well, when I get an email from you, there's a quote by Aristotle, we are what we repeatedly do.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're always right.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl Nightingale said, if you spend an extra hour each day of studying a chosen field, you'd be a national expert in 5 years. This is all speaking to what you're talking about right now.
Exactly, yes. Stone said to me, if you'll read for an hour a day, he said in 5 years you'll be in the top 1% of your field. And I've read over 3,000 books since then, and I am in the top 1% of my field.
Well, we are at the 70-minute mark, which we promised everyone. We have 20 more minutes in us. Do you have 20 more minutes in you, Jack?
I'm okay if you are.
Okay, I'm going to go live now. And if you've muted yourself, unmute yourself and just stand up and give me a loud yes. If you want 20 more minutes of Jack Canfield and the Law of Attraction, give me a loud yes. Here we go. Yes?
Yes.
I couldn't mute again.
Oh, I'm a sucker for positive feedback. I'll stick around.
Well, you know, sometimes we can cause our own attraction, right?
Well, that was gratitude. See, that works.
That works. And the wonderful thing about gratitude, you can't feel anything but it. It just floods through your nervous system. It's so amazing if you just get it started and get it working in your nervous system. One thing we attract, one thing I've attracted, and I'm sure many people listening as well, is debt during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure many people listening right now, if they take a reality check, there's a little bit of debt on their credit cards because of the gifts and the giving that they're in the spirit of during the holidays. And it doesn't matter of what, you know, spiritual background you are, this is a giving time of the year. And so let's talk about eliminating debt and attracting more money and more wealth, because, you know, we'll be talking about health and wellness in just a moment, but how do you eliminate debt without focusing on debt and attract more money and wealth? That's a tricky one sometimes.
Well, it is, because if you focus on eliminating debt, you're focusing on debt. I mean, it can be done. People have done it. We've all eliminated debt in our life. So, but the question becomes, can it be done more quickly and with less effort and more gracefully, more elegantly? And I think that the main thing is to figure out how much money would you need to bring in order to be out of debt? What would a debt-free life look like, you know? I used to teach you could use iconic images like a picture of your mortgage with paid on it. An iconic image is any image that captures the essence of a whole stream of events in one image. Like the fall of the end of the Cold War could be captured in one photograph of the German, you know, the wall coming down in Germany,
mm-hmm.
the Berlin Wall. So basically, you can create an iconic image, like if you wanted to be a millionaire, you could see a check with $1 million written on it to you. I mean, everyone knows the story about Jim Carrey going up into the mountains in Mulholland Drive over L.A. and writing himself a check for $10 million for services rendered as a great actor. And, you know, 3 years later, he got a check for $10 million, and the next movie, he got $20 million. Bruce Lee did a very similar thing. So basically, I think it's more important to focus on what it would look like if you were on the other side of it. Why just go to zero?
Right.
A friend of mine, Raymond Aron, has this idea of MTO, minimum target outrageous. So he sets three levels for every goal for himself. Like, let's say he wants to, his goal is to get his garage cleaned out. The minimum goal would be to go out and pick up five things, decide if he wants to keep them, and if he doesn't, take them to the garbage can. If he does, put it back on the floor in the garage. A target would be to go out and to spend one day cleaning out his garage. Outrageous would be to hire a company to come in and sheetrock the garage, put in all kinds of, you know, California closets type storage space, take everything out of the garage and only put it back in one of the times he wants to keep it, donate the rest. And what he finds is by setting his goals that way, he gets momentum going because he knows he can do the minimum, so that makes him feel good. The target, then he starts thinking about that, and by then he's got so much momentum going, 9 times out of 10, he achieves the outrageous. But my point of view is, why not just go straight for the outrageous, believe you can do it, and go for it. So for me, if I had $144,000 in debt, as I did when our first Chicken Soup book came out, instead of focusing on the debt, I was always focused on what I wanted my life to look like when I got there. And as Patty was talking,
Patty was telling me this. Like,
yeah. We were
the company's in debt, and you're going, oh, well, I'm focusing on other things.
Yeah, she used to get so frustrated because she couldn't get me upset about how much debt we had.
Uh-huh.
And I had learned from W. Clement Stone that debt's not a terrible thing. Basically, think of it as an investment in the future. Now, if you're only buying, you know, fur coats and cars, and they're, you know, as we learned from Kiyosaki, these are depreciable liabilities instead of assets, like a real estate that appreciates over time and also creates income. But if you've got $300,000 in debt because you've purchased three properties, or you've started your business, or you've invested in the new, you know, program you're creating, like we'll be investing $150,000 in upgrading our e-coaching program this year, what happens is that it's really not debt. It's just an investment. So, first of all, don't get freaked out about it. And then the second, because again, remember what I said earlier, it's not the thought, it's the feeling that goes with it.
Yes.
So if you have debt and you go, I mean, how much debt does Donald Trump have? Tons. Because he's investing all over the place in building buildings. And, you know, he's got a lot of debt to deal with. But it's not something he's upset about, it's just part of the process of playing the real estate game. So the first thing is your attitude about it. But to go back, if your goal was to really be debt-free, then it would be how much would it take to do that. Then you'd see those numbers coming in, and that would be your focus, would be to manifest that. And then how you feel if you were debt-free, and focus on that. And if you can achieve that now, that goes back to the idea that if you can be free of the negativity, even when you have the debt's guaranteed to disappear, because it's the feeling tone that's going to produce the result.
Yeah, I've heard a really, really relevant metaphor to, it's not the thought, it's the feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, the thought can be the steering wheel on your car, mm-hmm. and the feeling is pressing down on the accelerator, right?
Exactly.
So if you have a child and, you know, the car is off, they can play with the steering wheel all they want, but it becomes dangerous if, you know, the car is on and they get to press on the accelerator. So mm-hmm. it's that accelerator that you got to be really careful of, making sure that you know, you press it the right way and it goes in the right direction. So.
Well, I have another little metaphor to that. I used to always say that most people are traveling through life with their emergency brake on. And how many of us have driven our car and realized we had emergency brake on?
Yep.
And I'll teasingly say to my audience, how many of you, when you notice that, just push harder on the gas? Everyone looks at you like you're crazy. No,
so you smell the smoke, right?
You know, and so basically, the brake that we're all working with is our limiting negative beliefs, our lack of certainty, our doubts, our fears, our guilt, our sense of unworthiness, our low self-esteem. And that's why, you know, I think Jim Rohn once said, you know, your net worth improves when your self-worth improves. And, you know, it's just another way of saying you've got to work internally as much as you work externally. My friend that wrote the E-Myth, Michael Gerber, says you got to work on your business, not just in your business. And the same thing is you got to work on yourself, not just, you know, using yourself as a vehicle for action.
Yeah, and Jim Rohn also said, you know, the bigger the why, the easier the how.
Exactly.
So, you know, just focusing on the why and the feeling behind it is so, so powerful. So very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. So, Jack, we've talked about our purpose in life, visualization, distraction, eliminating debt, achieving goals. Let's jump to health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, you know, lots of people, they join a gym. And sometime between Thanksgiving and the Hanukkah days and Christmas, there's a few more of, you know, a few more pounds of us to love, right?
Yep.
And so how do we attract a more ideal physical fit body? How do we attract physical wellness? And, you know, if we have weight problems or physical conditions such as back pain and arthritis and other, you know, problems like that, how do we overcome those and just attract an ideal scene for our body that is more physically fit and just looks and feels better?
Well, you know, everything is basically thoughts and images. And so first is to look at your self-talk. I mean, we've all heard people say, no matter what I do, I can never lose weight. You know, whatever pounds I lose, they come back multiplied. I've tried every diet, they don't work, etc. And so it's very critical to pay attention to that. Number two is, what images are you holding of yourself? You know, if I love one of the techniques that I teach, that I learned from a teacher many, many years ago, was whatever your ideal weight you want it to be, take your scale, take a piece of paper over where the numbers show up. If it's digital, make it look digital. If it's a, you know, thing where the arrow goes around, you know, take a big piece of paper and cut it out to match that. And then draw in your ideal weight.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you step on the scale, you don't go, oh, damn, I weigh 220 pounds. You go, oh, look at that, 185. That's cool. Because what happens is, and a lot of people go, well, that's crazy, you're stupid, you're lying to yourself. Well, we lie to ourselves all the time when we tell ourselves we can't do stuff and we're focusing on how bad we feel because we weigh so much. And so I have some people, they refuse to weigh themselves because every time they weigh themselves, they just feel bad about it. But I like the idea of putting your ideal weight on your scale.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the coolest thing I've actually learned about law of attraction and weight is something from Michael Logier, who actually wrote a book called Law of Attraction. And what he taught me was a sentence. It's like an affirmation, but it's different. And I'll explain it. He says, the sentence is, I'm in the process of attracting all I need to know, do, or have to attain and maintain my perfect body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I at my perfect body weight of 185. Because a lot of times when people say that, their brain goes, no, I'm not. I've never been at 185. No one in my family's weighed 185. Everyone in my family's fat, you know. And as soon as you start that and the feelings that go with it, you're now focusing on what you don't want again. But if you say, I'm in the process of attracting all I need to know, do, or have to attain and maintain my perfect body weight, what happens is that's very easily believable, and it affirms that you're now attracting what you need. And what I then did was I took a picture of the ideal body that I wanted to look like, and I cut my head out, and I put it on that body, and I have it on the inside of my medicine cabinet. So every morning when I open that up to get my hair dryer and stuff, I see that picture. And then I close my eyes for a minute, and I actually visualize myself weighing that weight. What happened when I started doing that was I was weighing about 226, I think, at the time. And I wanted to weigh less, and I tried a number of things. They weren't working, but I kept using this little affirmation and believing it was going to happen. And John Gray, who's the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, called me to ask me a question about publishing. The publisher he was having difficulty with in New York and how he should deal with it. And after we discussed it, I said to him, you know, well, what book are you working on? He says, what's Mars and Venus on a Diet? I says, Mars and Venus on a Diet? What the hell do you know about diets? You're the relationships guy. He said, well, what I found out is that the reason most people can't maintain a relationship is their brain chemistry is lacking women in serotonin, men in dopamine, and they can't hold the level of consciousness that would allow them to have the kind of relationship that they want. So he went on to talk about all these nutrients we need for the brain, and he said, I found a product that actually delivers them all. And he said, and I used the product, and he said, a side effect was I lost 15 pounds. I said, John, what's the product? Because I need to lose about 35 pounds. So he told me about the product. I ordered it, and within 31 days, I lost 35 pounds. Now,
You're kidding. It's like more than a pound a day.
I know, and all the doctors will tell you that's
it
not
It can't happen, right?
It can't happen. It's not good for you. You'll gain it all back. I've kept that weight off. I've never gone over 195 again since that time. You know, I might fluctuate in the 3 or 4 pound range depending on Christmas and vacations and all that. But instantly I can just use the product again for a couple of days, come right back to my ideal weight. And I replace a breakfast every day with this shake that they sell. The point being that I attracted John Gray into my life who had the perfect solution. It didn't come the way I thought it was going to come. I didn't have to kill myself to do it. I exercised 20 minutes a day and just used the product and ate the diet that they suggested in terms of, you know, a 600-calorie lunch and so on and so forth. But the point being that you will attract in because there are so many different diets. We have, I saw the other day, 64,000 different potential genetic combinations that would affect your diet, meaning that some people can eat certain foods and other people can't. Some people, a diet will work for it, but another person won't work for it. And so it's not just enough to say, I'll cut out carbs or I'll do this. You want to attract the perfect thing into your life.
Well, it's interesting. Sometimes you attract the movie. I attracted watching a movie called The Santa Claus.
Uh-huh.
There's the Santa Claus 3 right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just watching it with my kids, and Jackie, it was the most amazing thing, one of the most profound quotes came for that movie, and I wrote it down. I ran my office in my home, and I wrote it down. And in the movie, I think it was the little girl who says, seeing is not believing. Believing is seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from this movie that gets 2 stars out of 5, right? But it's such a profound quote. I thought, wow, I'm going to start utilizing that, you know, in my teleseminars and my seminars and stuff like that, because it's crazy. Some of the most trivial things or trivial experiences that you think are trivial can have little seeds of lessons in there that can grow and have profound impact. And such as writing your ideal weight next to your scale, mm-hmm. Some people may be listening saying, that sounds silly. Well, you know what? You may lose a pound a day if you did it, right?
Yeah. You know, I teach something called the rule of five, which says when you have a breakthrough goal, do five things every day that will help you achieve that goal. And if you take the issue of weight loss, I mean, there's so many different things you can do. We know that if you drink 10 glasses of water a day, that contributes to weight loss. If you do breathing exercises for 10 minutes, that raises your metabolic rate, so you'll burn more fat. If you do 20 minutes of aerobic exercise, that raises your your set point, so that you actually burn more
mm-hmm,
fat.
Mm-hmm.
If you read something every day about weight loss, it keeps your mind focused on that. If you lift weight, muscle burns more energy than the rest of your body does. So the more muscle you have, the more you burn off every day just from breathing. So there's so many, many things you can do. And, you know, one can learn them. There's a ton of books out there. But if you did five things every day to focus on your weight loss, you're eventually going to lose that weight.
Well, I'll tell you one right now. You know, I go to the strategic coach, and I know you know Dan Sullivan.
Sure.
And every time we go, we have this little pocket coach, and we try to change one habit every 21 days instead of trying to change, you know, 10 habits at once.
Right.
And so my habit for the next 21 days is very simply this. It's almost comically simple, but I think it's going to have a huge impact. And it's drink 8 glasses of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if people realize it, but most people don't drink 8 glasses of water. You know, coffee doesn't count. Soda pop doesn't count. You know, wine doesn't
count.
Water.
Uh-huh.
8 glasses of water. And believe me, Jack, it is not easy to drink 8 glasses of water. You have to actually, I have to think about it. So that by itself is a habit, and I'm finding myself eating less junk food as a result of just simply drinking 8 glasses of water a day. Something
yeah.
so simple like that.
Well, often we're eating when we're really dehydrated. There's a wonderful book out there, Alex. It's called You're Dying of Thirst.
Mm-hmm.
The author makes the claim that every disease is a result of dehydration. That if one is properly hydrated, there's enough water in your body to get the nutrients into the cell and get the toxins out. And there's only two causes of disease. It's absence of nutrition and over-toxification. And so what happens is that when you're drinking more water, I actually had my secretary until it became a habit for me, because it was one of my goals for a year was to drink 8 glasses of water a day, was I would buy 8 of those pints, like, you know, of the
mm-hmm.
water you buy in the store.
Yeah.
And I would put them on my desk, and I wasn't allowed to go home until all 8 were drunk. And every
yeah.
time I'd look up, I would see how many I had to go. And then she would come over and buzz me every hour and say, did you drink your water for this hour? And I just used external supports like that to get me to where I wanted to go until I got there. And now it's a habit. I don't even think about it. I just automatically drink it.
Jack, it's such an important point, because something as mundane as drinking water, getting started sometimes is the most difficult thing. It's just getting off the ground. Gravity has such a powerful force on any new habit that is about to be set into motion. So that goes for the purpose in life exercise, the visualization, eliminating distractions and attracting more money and wealth, achieving goals, health and wellness. It's the getting started part that's so difficult. Do you have any advice for us on that? What's the fastest and easiest way to get started on all of this so that we can put the law of attraction to better use?
Well, I think one of the keys is to have someone else that works with you to hold your consciousness together. I call it an accountability partner, several of them together. You call it a mastermind group. But I played a game recently called the Happy, Healthy, Wealthy game that one of my friends put together. And every day for 3 months, we had to call our accountability partner in the morning and talk about the 5 things we were going to do that day that would move us forward to be happier, healthier, and wealthier. And for many people, it was drinking water. For others, it was exercise. But you had to tell them what you were going to do. And then the next day, you had to report in if you did it or not. And there's something about being accountable to another person
yeah.
that you just hate to tell them 3 days in a row, I didn't do it, I didn't
yeah.
do it, I didn't do it. You feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
And so I think having a way to be accountable. Every great athlete has a coach. The coach tells them how many laps to run and how many laps to swim and how many baskets to shoot and so forth. And if you have that, you know, in your life, because we've all proven there are areas in our life where we can't be trusted. It might be food, it might be alcohol, it might be focusing on work, it might be addicted to some video game or computer games, so you're not getting enough sleep. And in those areas where we're not capable, if we was a body, we put a cast on a broken bone. It's not able to hold our body up. So externally, a coach or another person is a good thing to do, to have you accountable so that you know, just like you with Dan Sullivan, you keep score and you report in at the end of that day when you go back to your coaching program about how you did.
Well,
that keeps you on focus.
Yeah, it keeps you focused. There's an effect I've learned about called the Hawthorne effect. You know, that which you measure will improve, but that which you measure and report on sometimes improves exponentially. So just having a coach to report to or a group to report to can accelerate.
Well, an interesting thing on scorekeeping, because I wrote about this in my book, I have a friend who's an expert in scorekeeping, and he works for companies, and he went into this one company, and they were focused on reducing absenteeism. Now, what does that tell us based on what we know about law of attraction?
More absenteeism.
You're going to get more absenteeism. So what they did is they started focusing on increasing days of attendance at work. And as soon as they did that, people started showing up more often because they were focusing on raising the number up, like, you know, getting a better score than focusing on trying to get, you know, stop a worse score.
That's a really good point. And then I'm going to have to focus on this because you get a lot of these questions, and that is, and it's my final question for the evening, it's not working. It's not working. I've done everything you've suggested. I visualize daily. I watch The Secret twice a day. I listen to the CDs all night. I haven't had any positive results. What am I doing wrong? Okay, how do you respond to them?
Well, I think we already covered that, actually. I think we jumped ahead in the middle of this and answered that. But I think the key things we said was, number one, it's not working, and you're focusing on it not working, so you're getting more of it's not working. Secondly, you've got to get rid of the doubt. You're doing something wrong, and usually it's that you're not taking action, you're not following your impulses, you're not trusting the inspirations. We talked about being psychologically switched and reversing that through tapping on the heel of your left hand 35 times. And I think a lot of people, what's stopping them is fear. They become perpetual students. And I actually did that in my own life at one point. I was reading, and getting more and more information, but I wasn't acting on it. I was afraid of making a mistake, screwing up, not doing it well, etc. And I love a seminar I took recently. One of the quotes from the trainer was, it's not important that you get it perfect. It's important that you get it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then just know that if you get started, you're going to get feedback. I mean, we have two different coaching programs we've got. We're starting a third one. And, you know, we spent the last 2 weeks here in the office just working on improving our e-coaching course. And we found some new technology. We found some new ways to do it better, et cetera. And now we're creating a live coaching program, very much like Dan Sullivan's thing that you talked about, the Strategic Coach Program, called our Platinum Inner Circle Mastermind Alliance. And I know that this will be our first year, that the second year will be better than the first year, and the third year will be better than the second. But my fear of not doing it as well as someone else could have stopped me from doing it at all. And so the key is to visualize what you want, believe you're going to do it, start to take the actions that make sense. And here's the key. Respond to feedback. Solicit feedback. Ask for feedback. You're going to get feedback anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people do is they resist feedback. They argue with the feedback. I always say to people, you know, if you don't ask your wife, I teach this question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the quality of our relationship? How would you rate the quality of our service, this call we just finished, whatever? If anything less than a 10 gets a follow-up call, what would it take to make it a 10?
Mm.
And most people, I say, well, how many of you are willing to ask your wife that question or your husband that question? And in my audience is less than half the hands go up. And I say, what would stop you? They say, well, I'm afraid of what she's going to say. And I answer back this. I say, look, you're the only one who doesn't know. She's already told her mother, her sister, the women in the hair salon, the lady at the checkout counter in the supermarket. And those people can't do anything to improve the relationship. You're the only one who can. And so we only get better by responding to the feedback, finding out what it is we can do better, and then choosing to do it.
I think I read that that exercise in one of your books, and that has a very powerful impact on just communicating with someone, because then what ends up happening is you dialogue. You're forced into a dialogue, and you're getting feedback, not good or bad, it's just feedback, and then now you know what the other person is feeling.
Yeah, it's just information. it could be right or wrong or whatever, but if you don't have the feedback, you don't have anything to work with.
Well, Jack, I appreciate you for this call. This has been a very, very not only insightful evening for all of us, but it's timely. We're about to head into the new year in 2007. There's a lot of change that just automatically happens. And I'm going to go, unless you have some final words, I'm going to go live and close out the call by saying farewell to everyone. But you've got the final word. Any final words as we go into the new year?
No, I you know, it was really funny. They asked Oprah recently on a show. She asked her guests, you know, if you were talking to yourself when you were 12 years old, what would you say? And every one of them said, love yourself more. Accept yourself. Be who you are. Quit trying to prove yourself. You've already proven it. You won the sperm race. There's nothing more to prove. You're here. You're in the game. Have fun. Enjoy it, you know. And I would say pretty much the same thing. Just,
yeah.
You know, it's a great year. Let's enjoy it and create what we want and believe we can and support each other and trust that the universe is a loving place, because I believe it is. And if you believe it is, it will be.
It will be. And just have a cheerful expectancy towards 2007. Jack Canfield, thank you very much for tonight. And Sprite Laureano, thank you. Remember, this was sponsored by Feed333. If you go to feed333.org/donate, go ahead and make your donation. Every dollar feeds a child. $1, one child gets fed. Just go to that site and make your donation. feed333.org/donate. On behalf of Jack Canfield, my name is Alex Mondosian, and Sprite Laureano of Feed333. We're going to wish you good luck and a great new year. We hope our paths cross again next year. Let me go live right now, Jack, and let's bid them good night. Here we go. Good night, everybody.